The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have John Wilner coming up, as we do every Monday. Those of you that watch right on time at 10:06, I don't know why this happens in this world of technology. All of a sudden, today, out of the blue, it's you need a new password. You guys ever been in that space where it's time to update? No, I have a show to do. I don't have time to sit. Nope, that password is too similar. I have to do a show, and Iron Man is sitting on the other side. Like, what is going on with Brad? So, apologies up front that I'm a couple of minutes late. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. As always, we appreciate their support. Really excited about the Football AZ show this week. And just a little plug there. And on the site this morning, Ellie of Gabay put up a story that is so good. So good about a football player who's undergone a ton at Arizona College Prep, lost his sight, and now he's coaching. It's as good as anything out there today. Because, yeah, I could lead with the Cardinals, and we saw the Super Cardinals, but hey, we're on Amazon Prime this week. If you're one of those that, like, cares, like Amazon Prime is what makes the world go round, I'm probably not the right guy for you. Probably not. I'm not chasing you off. It's just, I don't know, if you want the Cardinals or Super and it makes all the sense in the world, like look at how awesome and amazing we are. I don't know. I'm about winning. Pretty simple. Don't win, not about it. If you have 8 pre-snap penalties and we're into November, and you have 8 pre-snap penalties. 8! And you have a center that hikes the ball over, guy, that's bigger than me. I'm 6'8". Like, I'm supposed to come on here and go team. That's never going to happen on this show. So I'm probably not the right person for you. When things are good, they're good. When things are bad, they're bad. Things are really bad here. And it's been ongoing with this franchise since last spring. The owner has it all figured out. The owner is the one that said, yep, we're going to extend the coach. We're going to extend the general manager. We're going to extend the quarterback. And then they have all the bleep storm going on in the offseason with the quarterback not studying enough, and he gets embarrassed and humiliated. They've got to call a press conference to calm all that down. And then they start out the season, and it's, well, just wait till D-Hop gets back. And D-Hop's been back, and DeAndre Hopkins has been great. He has. But what you don't take into account is 8 pre-snap penalties. 12 penalties in all. That's not how you beat any NFL team. And in fact, I'm not piling on here. I'm just simply bringing up facts. 5 teams, count them, 5, that have a worse record than the Cardinals since 2019. 5 of them. Let's see. The Lions, the Panthers, the Jaguars, the Commanders, and the Texans. That's it. Those are the only 5 that have a worse record than the hometown heroes here in our city. And, you know, they have the Rams next week. Rams are coming off a loss in Tampa. 3-6. Looking at 3-7. Oh, you're so negative. No, I'm not. You tell me who's going to beat any team with 8 pre-snap penalties at home. This isn't like there were noise issues. You know, what was the game? The Tennessee game on Saturday. Tennessee had noise issues in Georgia. They couldn't hear the snap. They're jumping all over the place. That was on the road. This is at home. So, you know, it's embarrassing that they're this bad. They're 10-19 at home under Cliff Kingsbury. 10-19. So you put down your hard-earned money, you go out to the stadium, and you take in this product off a coach that just got extended. So, no, I'm not happy about it. I actually thought the biggest story of the weekend was the Cam Johnson injury with the Suns. And look, I'm on that side of the street of, I don't care if they go 9-15 between now and mid-January. I don't. I know it doesn't make for scintillating talk radio. I know I'm supposed to sit there and say, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. it's a meniscus, which is like, it's like taking this pair of nail cutters and trimming a nail, just like a little piece of the nail. Let me see if I can get it. A meniscus tear is like a little piece of the nail. It's like that. And then they close it back up, and it's 4 to 6 weeks, and he's back playing. Meniscus happens. I've had double knee replacement. I've had double-digit knee surgeries in my family. We got it on meniscus. Meniscus is not the most severe, but it's bad, okay? Because as you slowly take the meniscus, that's the pounding of the in the knee. And does it become something that is problematic over the long term? Don't know. Remember Amari's knees. Let's go back on Amari Stoudemire and his knees. You start hearing words like microfracture, and I'm not saying that here. That's just not good. So that to me was the biggest story. Tonight the Suns played Philly. It's DeAndre against Joel Embiid. I would like to see DeAndre at some point just take a swing at Joel Embiid, because Joel Embiid always gets into DeAndre, always. And I think he enjoys it, tries to throw him off his game and all that. And tonight it's Suns, Sixers. They then go to play in Minnesota, Orlando, and a week from today they play in Miami. They're going to be gone. They're not going to have Cam Johnson. And I'm pretty certain they're going to come back with a couple losses. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you get too high or too low off this stuff. I don't see a reason for Monty to go play Chris Paul 42 minutes in November. Again, I am all about what happens in April. So if the Suns go through a rough patch because of injury, they didn't have DeAndre last week. They lost on Friday night to Portland. It looked like the player for the Blazers traveled, hits shots, the way it goes in the NBA. I don't get too high or too low off this stuff. I know that I should just be outraged and I should be offended and all that. I'm offended that the Cardinals are so bad. Like, really? Because everything that was laid out there was, well, just wait till DeAndre comes back. Robbie Anderson yesterday, clank. And it just feels like this thing is this close to imploding for the season if it hasn't already done it. And I don't see where this owner is going to have the intestinal fortitude to say, I was wrong. It's not that hard. You walk up to the podium and you say, we believed, but things changed. Well, what changed the last 9 months? Well, obviously, guys, look at the results. We messed up. People don't like to admit and take blame. They should. Instead, we're going to get a whole lot of watch the Cardinals on Amazon this week. We're going to just, let's just forget about it. Let's PR this thing to death. No, you can't. Take 3 hours of a Sunday and watch it be flushed down the toilet because, you know, the team can't even get it right before the snap takes place 8 times. All right. We've got Wilner coming up, and then I'm going to come back into Arizona State and what's going on with the coaching search. A few other things on my mind, but up next is John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, every Monday, John Wilner joined us. Wilner Hotline on Twitter. You can see his content on sports360az.com and on his platforms as well. He is part of the Wilner Canzano podcast. It takes place every week, sweeping the nation by storm, I think about a month and a half in. All right, let's, before we get into Oregon and Washington, I want to get your thoughts on you today. If you're on the committee, does Oregon make it in? Does the Pac-12 make it in as you see games unfolding? I think Michigan, Ohio State, you can make the argument, would both be in today, but they've got a playoff game against one another. Pac-12, John, a few weeks left in the regular season. Do you think they're going to make it, and would you have one of them in today?
I think there's actually a chance that one of them's going to make it, and we haven't been able to say that in many years. Usually, right. The Pac-12 is eliminated by November 1st. It's like Conference USA. But no, I think, actually, in my mind, USC has the best chance, right? If you gamed out scenarios in which UCLA was a 12-1 Pac-12 champ, Oregon 12-1 Pac-12 champ, USC 12-1 Pac-12 champ. USC has the best case because it does not have any of the stench from Oregon's 49-3 loss to Georgia. I think that game, even if Oregon wins out, is going to give the committee reason to seriously think about leaving the Ducks out. I mean, 46-point losses are hard to overcome. Meanwhile, UCLA lost to Oregon. So the Bruins have lost by 15 to a team that lost by 46. USC, on the other hand, either won't have played Oregon to finish 12-1 or will have beaten Oregon to finish 12-1. So that's why I view the Trojans as the best chance. As of right now, I don't think anybody would get in. But, you know, there's a few weeks to play. The Pac-12 needs TCU to lose, desperately needs TCU to lose, and probably needs Alabama to beat Ole Miss, right? Because Ole Miss could still finish as a one-loss SEC champion. And that would give the SEC two bids because Ole Miss would get in and Georgia would get in.
Less than a month ago, who plays for the Pac-12 title? What's the title game look like to you? Is it USC-Oregon? Is that the game that we all want to see? UCLA-Oregon? Someone else?
Well, if you're the conference, you absolutely want Oregon against USC, right? They haven't played each other. They're the two biggest TV brands, and they probably will end up being the highest-ranked teams. That is your ideal matchup in Las Vegas if you're the Pac-12. And that game, to me, it probably comes down to the winner of the USC-UCLA game against Oregon because Utah's got to win. Utah, they got to win in Eugene. That's going to be tough, right? So I would probably give Oregon the edge against – who do you think is going to win, USC-UCLA? I would probably bet on the Trojans, but that game is going to be high-scoring and close. So Utah, to me, has got the toughest road.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline. He joins us every week. Here in Arizona, the Wildcats get beat on. ASU makes a nice comeback, but that game was out of control. I saw where you wrote that Aguano does not have a shot. I don't want to take your words out of context, but basically you're not of the opinion that he's going to have a shot here, right?
I would be I'm not sure he does, right? I think the bar was going to be was very high for him to earn the permanent job. And I haven't seen him clear it. I know he's done good things with accountability and internally, but it's going to be hard, you know, to promote a coach who's taken a bunch of losses and probably has a couple more coming as well. I think ASU, you know, certainly the NCAA situation is going to affect the coaching search and who, and whether Ray Anderson is in charge and is making the hire is also going to affect it. But, you know, Kenny Dillingham at Oregon is making a great case for himself, you know, with his Arizona State ties, Phoenix ties, and the fact that Ducks are rolling and he's the opposite of Herm, right? You know, the pendulum typically swings in picking presidents of the United States and head coaches in the Pac-12. The pendulum swings. Schools tend to go the opposite, and the opposite of Herm Edwards is Kenny Dillingham.
What about U of A this year, John? I mean, Jed is in the year number two, and they've doubled their win total. But the last few weeks, they've gotten beat on again. It's kind of reverted back. What do you make out of U of A? We've talked a lot about ASU this year.
Yep. But
what do you think of the job that he's doing there and the progress or lack thereof? Either way, how do you see it so far with Jed?
Well, I think that there is definitely progress, right? They're more competitive. They got more wins. They're more competitive. But to me, I think Arizona is not, you know, if right now is a season success. I'd probably say it's not. I think Fish, in order to have a successful season, you know, he's got to win. He's got to beat ASU or he's got to win, you know, maybe what they got Washington State at home. I don't think 3-9 is going to be a successful season. I think he needs to get to 4 wins. I think he needs to beat ASU. That to me, that's going to be real telling. ASU's owned the series lately. That's a big game. Arizona's problem is clear. They're terrible on defense. And I think they shouldn't be as bad as they are on defense. I think the personnel is not great, but it is not 48, 50 points a game bad. So that, to me, is where they have really disappointed.
Okay. And U of A made a very good run last year in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Think that there aren't players right now that aren't being pursued in the transfer portal by bigger programs that are saying, hey, that's great what you've done in Tucson, but come over here and we'll make it happen. The same thing with Arizona State. I think that, you know, my understanding is that it's re-recruiting their own players here in early November. And I'll be interested to see if Jed is able to keep guys, because in the next month, those seasons are going to be over. And I think we're going to see a slew of guys say, yeah, I'm hearing some voices and some NIL money outside of Tucson and Tempe.
Yeah, oh, no question. That's the biggest thing for head coaches now. First, before you sign a recruiting class, You got to re-recruit your own guys. Mm-hmm. And that process starts the day the season ends. And if you're Arizona, you probably got to be worried you're going to lose a couple of receivers, right? Those are good players. And if you're ASU, you got to be worried you're going to lose a couple of receivers. Those guys are good players. So, but in both cases, the head coaches and whoever the head coach is at ASU, they've got to, you know, shore up the home front first. There's no doubt that is the new era of college football, especially if you're a second rate program that's, you know, doesn't have great NIL money and isn't playing for championships.
A couple other questions. I'll let you go. Appreciate your time as always. Anything new on the media negotiations front or things that caught your eye since the announcement came out? I saw Brett Yermark touting his wares over on Fox on their pregame show on Saturday. Anything new?
Well, a big development is that the UC Regents have placed on their agenda for November 17th, the UCLA decision on the Big Ten. So I think that that point, November 17th, we are going to finally have some clarity on whether the Bruins are actually going into the Big Ten, whether they're staying in the Pac-12, whether they are going to have to subsidize Cal some revenue. And at that point, I think the Pac-12 will be able to proceed pretty quickly with wrapping up its media deal. My guess is by early December, it'll be done because they're kind of waiting to find out for sure if UCLA is leaving. And there is a little bit of doubt as to whether the Bruins are actually going to make this move. November 17th, we'll know.
Really? I mean, do you really believe, John, that this thing for UCLA could fall apart?
I do. I mean, I don't think that that is the likely outcome, but I think the chances are, you know, it's a 5-10% chance, but the Pac-12 can't sign a new media deal until it's 100% chance. 100% sure either way, right? That's the big issue. So once they get that done and UCLA is probably moving on its merry way, then the Pac-12 will wrap things up. But they have been, you know, negotiating and assessing valuations for both scenarios, UCLA reversing course and UCLA moving ahead to the Big Ten.
Tonight basketball opens. I don't want to throw a curveball at you. So I just... curious if there's any, because you do cover basketball as well, inside and out. Anything that is interesting to you as the season opens tonight, both ASU and U of A are in action this evening. Anything on your radar on that front?
Well, a couple of things. One is there's a lot of Pac-12 coaches on the hot seat, I think, entering this season, including Bobby Hurley. Mm-hmm. Two, certainly can Arizona come close to repeating the success it had in year one under Tommy Lloyd, right? I don't think that it's as talented a roster. You lose three NBA draft picks. That happens. But certainly they should, you know, compete for a top spot in the Pac-12. The other thing is just generally, how's the Pac-12 going to do the non-conference games these first 6 or 7 weeks of the season? That shapes how each league does on Selection Sunday. Pac-12 had a very poor non-conference season last year. I think the COVID hangover really hurt. This year, it should be better. It should be like football, right? The football season was better this year. I think basketball should be better because COVID is completely behind, you know, in the rearview mirror for these teams.
That's John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can find his content on the website. You can follow him at Wilner Hotline. And of course, the Canzano Wilner podcast. John, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brett.
And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, thanks again to John Wilner for being with us. I didn't go too in-depth on ASU and U of A with John, as I usually do. I was at the game Saturday night. I actually went down to Tempe for ASU against UCLA. I wanted to see the 12th-ranked Bruins. I took in a lot of college football over the weekend. I wanted to see Tennessee and Hooker, their quarterback. I'm a Heisman voter. It's that time of year where I feel like if you're going to do this, you need to watch and then talk. And so I watched Tennessee just get destroyed by Georgia. And I want to see what UCLA is all about in the college football playoff. ASU's run defense, yeah, that was awful. Over 400 yards rushing, you're not going to win. And it's not Sean Aguano's fault. He is the interim head coach. I still believe that it's a long shot for him to get the job. I don't believe that if you go off his whole body of work, that you can say definitively he is the wrong guy for the job. Yes, there are other names, as John just brought up, that are out there. Kenny Dillingham and Oregon are putting up a lot of points right now. He is the offensive coordinator. They are wide open. He also happens to have a quarterback and this isn't anything towards Bourget, but he has talent around Bourget to, or Bo Nix as well at Oregon, that have been there and established, whether it's through their former coach, Mario Cristobal, who, by the way, is getting his head kicked in at Miami, or just in recruiting. Arizona State, that's not an easy job to recruit to right now. And as I look at where things are with Sean, I don't think the administration would allow the Ohana to be printed on the field as it was on Saturday if there wasn't somebody inside saying, well, let's get this out here. There's a lot flying around at ASU, a lot, like a lot more than just what you see on the surface from my view and what I hear. But I will tell you this, I got there early and there was a buzz, there was a good crowd, it was family weekend. I went down on the field. I usually don't do that. I usually go right to the press box, went down to the field and just hung out down there and talked to people, ran into people. In the northwest corner of the stadium, that's where all of the top recruits, all the recruits come to visit, okay? So if you ever go to the stadium and you see this gaggle of players and parents in the northwest corner of the end zone, that is where the recruits are before the game starts. And so I walk through there and I'm noticing some familiar faces and some dudes. And I've noticed some unfamiliar faces. And I noticed some players with school swag on from California and some big time programs. And I'm looking at them like, okay, I haven't seen much of this lately. Doesn't mean they're coming. To think that Elijah Badger hasn't had people on his phone saying, hey, man, you need to transfer out. Look what happened to Jaden Daniels at LSU. You can do the same thing. You can be pitchforks up all day long, but that doesn't mean he's going to stay here. You have to re-recruit and re-recruit and re-recruit, as John and I were talking about. It never stops. Never stops. Remember Jaden last December? I'm going to be a Sun Devil. Last January, I'm going to be a Sun Devil. And then one day, no, I'm not. Yeah, because the Brinks truck backed up. I don't blame the kid. I'm happy he's having success. My point on this rant is I thought that they didn't show any quit. I thought that it was a game for about a quarter. And then it was pretty clear ASU's not going to be able to stop any of their running backs, even with Charbonneau not playing. And so here they are having to go to Pullman. It's not supposed to be nasty Pullman. It's supposed to be cold Pullman, 33 and sunny, partly cloudy on Saturday. So that's a benefit for them. It's on turf. Washington State had a big win this last week. Then they come back to Oregon State. Oregon State here is much different than going up to Corvallis. And then the Territorial Cup. And as I'm looking at all of this, I'm not getting a, hey, let's not get Sean out in the public, or, yeah, we want to run away from this. I think that if he hasn't had people that are going to make the decision tilt their head at least a little bit and say, maybe we have our guy and we don't know it, then I'm just really disappointed that the administration just is trying to go after a big fish or a big name or somebody who's getting the job done up at Oregon. You have to at least consider what's going on here. It's no longer a joke as some people thought that it was. The other thing I did over the weekend, so yeah, Friday I was at high school, Saturday I was at ASU, yesterday I went to the track. NASCAR is a huge economic driver in the Valley. I don't know how to gap a spark plug. I don't. Call me guilty as charged. I couldn't get under a hood or even struggle to figure out how to open a hood on a NASCAR. I couldn't do it. But I do know that the personalities of the drivers is what drives that business. Going 220 miles per hour doesn't, I mean, it's fine. It goes fast. So it's a thrill. It's a rush. I'm more about the personalities of the drivers. Place was packed. It was their last race of the year, their Super Bowl, so to speak. I know Daytona is referred to as a Super Bowl of racing. Devin Henry was out there and did a tremendous job on his own. Devin produced a TV show on Bally's through us that was tremendous on his own. We care, okay? I care about the personalities and the backside of it. I ran into Fitz out there. It's Sunday. It should be Cardinals Day. Nope, Larry's at the track. I respect that. He gets it. He knows how big this deal is. I ran into the new president of the track, Latasha Cossey. I've known Latasha for about a year now. Interesting lady and does a lot of good work behind the scenes. She's leaving Bell Bank to go over to NASCAR and to run the track here. It's important that we keep these mega events in place. It is. Having a Super Bowl is great. Having a Final Four is awesome. Having a college football playoff set is really, really good. Having the World Baseball Classic in March roll through. We are known for our mega events. We are. And it's not just about the game as it takes place. It's about all the stuff around the game is what matters. And it's great to be out the track yesterday. All right, we are going to replay this over and over and over. Tomorrow, Fabs will be with us, Michael Fabiano. Jody Jackson is going to be with us tomorrow. So Jody and I have a real problem with each other this week. My son goes to one high school. Her son goes to another. They meet each other this Thursday night. We're going to have a problem. Jody and I are going to mix it up tomorrow. We're going to talk junk to each other. And as always, when it's JJ, we'll catch up on the Coyotes and other things that she is doing because she's awesome and amazing. Speaking of awesome and amazing, Jared Nielsen is the chairman of the board. He puts this show together. If it's a train wreck, it's his fault, not mine. We'll see you tomorrow.